Please, we're ready to proceed.
Mr. Meloro?
Is that how you pronounce your name? Meloro or Meloro?
Meloro, yes.
Meloro, okay. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, and thank you for permitting us to be here today. The judgment of the District Court should be reversed because the Markman construction of fastening stem to require attachment of two components of a multi-component device was improper. It was improper for four different reasons. First of all, the construction is inconsistent with the claim language itself. The specification does not mandate or dictate the construction of a multi-piece device with attachment by a fastening stem. The construction is contradicted by the prosecution history, where the examiner specifically...
So in your view, why did the judge go astray here? Was it because of the, you know, MPP stuff we're dealing with on what went on below, or was it just that she looked at the embodiments and made too much of them, or what?
I think there were two fundamental aspects that contributed to the error here. One was the sense that the claim had to be limited to the embodiment in figures 4A and B simply because fastening stem was amended and inserted into the claim. Secondly, the judge discounted entirely, essentially, the prosecution history where the examiner specifically noted that claims 8 and 9 had all of the limitations of claim 1, were fully examined and determined to be patentable, and that could not be the case if claim 1 required attaching two components of a multi-component device.
Now, let's assume you're right about all that, and let's assume further that the district court made a mistake with respect to the claim construction issue. Where I have problem with your brief is starting at about page 35, where you get into the question of whether there is a fastening stem that is contemplated for the one-piece devices in light of the specification. And you say that, for example, and I'm reading from page 35, that because the conductor extends only partially through the terminal's cavity, this is with respect to the figures of the one-part device. Because the conductor extends only partially through the terminal's cavity, specification contemplates the space between the conductor and mounting cuff potentially being occupied by a fastening stem. Now, I don't see, and that seems to me just to be quite a stretch. I didn't see anything in the specification that suggests that the space, which is on figure 1C, between the phantom conductor and the junction, there's no suggestion that I could see that there's a fastening stem there, giving the term fastening stem any realistic definition.
Your Honor, the...
Do you understand? It's a long question, but I think you probably understand.
Yes, I think I understood the question, Your Honor. And let me start the answer by saying that figure 1C does not disclose a fastening stem. Figure 1C is a generic figure, and there is a space in the cavity which is not occupied by the conductor that is coming in.
And there's nothing about that space that suggests, as far as I could see, that it is or could be occupied by a fastening stem. The language of your brief suggests, well, it might be occupied by a fastening stem. Who knows? Isn't that the gist of what you're saying?
The specification itself does not say that a fastening stem could go in that space. The specification and the figure provide a space.
So I'm really having, even if we send this case back, I guess where the bottom line is, I don't see how, unless the accused devices actually have a stem that comes up in the middle of the cavity, of the one-piece devices, how you can possibly prevail on any reasonable application of the term fastening stem.
We're here for real reasons on this, Markman, and the infringement issue is a real issue case goes back.
Do I recall correctly that when the district court judge asked, I believe, where is a device that's a unitary construction that has a fastening stem, the answer was the accused device?
The accused device does indeed have a fastening stem, and it's a unitary device. The specification itself does not disclose a specific embodiment with that construction.
Your view is that the specification is broad enough that it could cover something where there's a little piece of metal that goes, I mean, I guess a solid construction that would go into where the second cavity 210 is, for example, in figure 2B.
That's correct, Your Honor. The specification.
But let me ask you something else. So I want to ask you about fastening. If there's a fastening stem in the claim, that's plain claim language. In the embodiment that you're envisioning, which isn't actually depicted in the specification, how is that fastening anything?
Because fastening is broader than attaching, and I think that was one of the fundamental errors the court made below. Fastening, if you just look to the plain and ordinary meaning from a dictionary, includes joining, affixing, or securing.
And then how is it joining, affixing, or securing?
Because if you had a fastening stem that was in that space, it is securing the terminal and the mounting cuff. These devices
even
are designed...
Even if they are just a one-piece device?
Even if it's just a one-piece device, because if that space existed without a fastening stem, when you crimped the terminal, which is how the device is designed to be used, that you make the connection and then you crimp, you could actually break the terminal if there's not sufficient support there. So if you have a fastening stem extending into that terminal, that can secure the terminal and the mounting cuff, and in particular could secure them for the purpose of the invention, which is when you make the connection and you crimp.
So the fastening stem would, in effect, be a strengthening stem.
In that instance, yes, mm-hmm. In the unitary construction with fastening stem.
But it's not fastening in the normal sense of the word, the terminal and cuff, because they're already fastened, they're one piece.
It is fastening in the ordinary sense. Merriam-Webster Dictionary, make fast and secure is one definition. Fix firmly and securely is another definition. And secure against opening is another definition. Mm. Attach is also a possible interpretation of fastening, but it's not the only one. And in the ordinary usage of fastening, it encompasses more than attachment of two pieces.
And the only fastening stem that you have in your specification is one that does more than that. Right? I mean, the only one you have disclosed is one that's described as joining the pieces together, such as by press-fitting the fastening stem of the mounting cuff 460 into the cavity 410 of the terminal 432, right?
The fastening stem is introduced at the bottom of column 5 into the top of column 6.
Right, it's only in that third embodiment. I'm not saying...
Yes, and then in figures... Yes, in figures 4A and B... The terminal and the mounting cuff are two separate components, mm-hmm. and there is a fastening stem. They are press fit together in that specific embodiment in figures 4A and B. And then, interestingly, if there's going to be fastening, the specification discloses at column 6, around line 17, that they may be joined together using a variety of other fastening means, including adhesives, mechanical fasteners, or welding.
One of the things that's troubling me is I'm thinking about, you know, the district court's language. The district court never said in its claim construction, it never said it had to be a unitary or a multi-piece device, right? It never said that. It simply says that a fastening stem has to attach, right?
The court did say, actually, in ruling on the reconsideration motion, and this is at Appendix 20, excuse me, 23, that the court found that the plain language of the claim suggests that a fastening stem is a stem that attaches or joins the other two components of the apparatus, and then specifically said that the court's view of the specification is consistent and supports Mersen's view that it is of a multi-piece construction. And the entirety of the argument before the district court was, essentially the entirety, was whether claim one, when you interpret fastening stem, encompasses unitary constructions or must be limited to multi-piece constructions. Mm-hmm. There was an argument that was made concerning waiver in the red brief. There was no waiver here at pages.
This is with respect to the generic use of the term
correct,
generic.
Correct.
Okay.
And at pages 4 and 5 of the reply brief, we laid out the various citations where the district court was advised that the argument was that claim one is indeed open to and covers unitary constructions in addition to multi-piece constructions. There were just a number of errors, I think, in the brief, the red brief that contributes to this waiver argument. I just would like to address a couple of them. The red brief at page 31 indicates that Littlefuse conceded that claim one is limited to a single species, namely that of figure four. That was never the case. There was no such concession. There was at page 32 an argument that Littlefuse argued that figure 1C shows a unitary end cap with a fastening stem. That was never argued by Littlefuse. There was also an argument regarding figures 2 and 3 having been dedicated to the public. And yes, a unitary construction without a fastening stem is not covered by claim 1. But that doesn't change the fact that claim 1 covers unitary constructions.
I'm looking at the stipulation that you have, the stipulation to non-infringement, and that presents the court's construction a little more narrowly than you're arguing it right now. On page A979, it says the court's construction of fastening stem, it doesn't describe it as requiring a unitary or a multi-component construction.
Your Honor, the construction with regard to attaches or joins other components, those components are different components. In other words, the parties argued whether or not that construction of attachment, what Littlefuse
so
argued.
So either mounting cuff and terminal, those are two components, right? Aren't those two components? Even though they might be in a unitary construction?
I don't know if you would call them elements or components if they were in a unitary construction.
The distinction seems a little bit hard for me to follow and understand. To be honest, it seems arbitrary to suit your purposes right now.
The Littlefuse argued that the term fastening stem should be for affixing, joining, or securing. Mersen argued that it should be for essentially attaching or joining. And both parties said that the implication was that the claim either is limited to multi-piece construction or is open to unitary construction. The district court fully understood that, rejected Littlefuse's argument, required that the components be attached or joined, and in the reconsideration motion, it specifically acknowledged that its intention was that the claim be limited to multi-piece construction and understood that claims 8 and 9, therefore, could not be practiced because they were not limiting claim 1 because claim 1 was to multi-piece construction and claims 8 and 9 were to unitary construction. So I think the ultimate construction and the court's understanding of the construction and the court's explicit statement on multi-piece construction mean that the issue before the court here ultimately is that the Markman construction on fastening is improperly narrow it should be to affix, join, or secure. And that the implication of that is that it covers unitary construction in addition to multi-piece.
You know, we have all these principles that we apply in claim construction, and some of them seem in tension with one another on occasion. And we've got the principle here which says you shouldn't limit it to the preferred embodiments. We've also got description and enablement cases that get you into trouble sometimes when there's nothing there. Is there a written description or an enablement issue, contention waiting in the wings here if you get the construction you want?
I don't know, standing here today, whether there is or not, but we'd be happy to deal with one if we had to. And quite frankly, the sort of argument that's being presented sounds more in written description than in claim construction. On a plain and ordinary meaning, given this intrinsic evidence, the claim should not be limited to multi-piece construction.
I want to ask you another question. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure I understand. So the court's construction is a stem that attaches or joins, and that is for fastening stem. And for the other full limitation, it's that it attaches. And it's your view that that is too narrow. And also you have this view that this construction automatically requires a multi-component device, right, in order for there to be infringement.
That is our understanding of the court's construction. That was.
I just don't see it in the stipulation. That's one of the problems I'm having. I think there's almost an assumption that requires a multi-component product, and that instead is a factual question for a jury to decide. And the construction simply says attaches or joins, or says attaches. So I want to make sure that you hear my position so you can respond to it. Why isn't that a factual question, given what is identified in this stipulation to non-infringement as being the construction?
The construction is a construction that requires the attachment, and the attachment was argued by both sides as to whether it would be open to unitary, and the court rejected that it would be open to unitary. The foundation of the court's ruling was that the claim should be limited by what was described in figures 4A and B, which is a multi-piece construction. And once the court issued
unitary, can you just, because Judge Stoll asked earlier about the word components, when you say unitary, what unitary about what?
It's the manufacturing process, Your Honor. So with a unitary construction, you would take one piece of material and you would either machine it, so you would remove material. And
it's machined or stamped, I think.
Machined or stamped. And if you machined it, you would end up with a terminal here and a mounting cuff there, but it all started as one piece of material.
But your view would be that would be one component that has three elements, a fastening stem, a mounting, whatever, and a terminal. That's your view?
That's our understanding of what the district court ruled in the Markman ruling.
But, you know, we look at claim construction de novo, and I might look at this construction and say, I don't think it's unreasonable to say it's a stem that attaches or joins other components, because it has the word fastening stem in it. So that fastening must be doing some work. It must have some meaning. And so because I look at it de novo and I say, well, that construction looks reasonable, even if I don't think it's necessarily reasonable to say that that's limited to a multi-component construction, why isn't that construction there with your stipulation something that I should just affirm?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that the construction that the court issued, the court understood to mean was limited to multi-piece construction. And we many times end up in cases where you end up having to do a Markman on a Markman later on after you get your ruling.
But let me ask you, I mean, the import of this is that you stipulated to non-infringement under this construction, and the other side apparently probably agreed with you. So is there any way we can look to confirm that the stipulation to non-infringement was because of your reading of the unitary stuff?
Yes, Your Honor. The court's Markman order, particularly the constructions that are laid out at A20 to 21, and then the court's ruling on reconsideration, and in particular the court's ruling discussion at A23 on a fastening stem.
But when I look at A20 to 21, which you just cited to me, the fastening stem is specifically defined. The court has very precise constructions on page A20 that are repeated in the stipulation. And they are the very ones we talked about. It doesn't say it has to be a multi-component device.
Your Honor, in the third construction, which is the longer term that includes fastening stem, the word attaches is what's used there. It's clear that the district
court... your understanding that because it uses the word attaches, that means multi-component.
That's correct, Your Honor. And if you look at the entirety through the Markman transcript itself, there was a lot of back and forth with counsel. And the Markman ruling itself and the reconsideration, the district court rejected the broader interpretation that was put forth by Littlefuse of joining, affixing, or securing.
Wasn't your construction based on it was just plain and ordinary meaning? Right.
Plain and ordinary meaning, and then joining, affixing, or securing.
Where exactly do you see that the district court says, no, I don't think attaching means join, affixing, or whatever the last verb was.
Joining, affixing, or securing. The court at pages appendix pages 15 and 16 discusses the Littlefuse construction, and in the middle, first full paragraph on page, appendix page 16, the court cites Littlefuse's citation to the Merriam-Webster definition of fastening as to attach, to make fast and secure, to fix firmly or securely, or to secure against opening. And then the court goes on to say that the dictionary is consistent with a fastening stem attaching the other two components. But attaching isn't the sum and substance of what the plain and ordinary meaning is. So the district court recognized that part of what Merriam-Webster permits is attachment, but then focused in and limited to attachment in making the Markman ruling, and therefore rejected the broader construction.
Just out of curiosity, it seemed odd that we have two claim constructions here, fastening stem and then fastening stem that extends, dot, dot, dot. The only one that I see that's in the claims is the latter. Why do we have a separate construction from the former?
The way the issues were presented below, individual words were construed by the parties, and then the broader phrase.
Let me put it this way. Does the dispute about fastening stem without the rest of the language matter if we focus on fastening stem that extends, dot, dot, dot?
No, it would not. The longer phrase, which requires attachment, captures the issue.
Okay,
we're way beyond our time. I will restore some rebuttal while we hear from the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor. Getting better at this.
First, or everything's going to come flying apart. May it please the court, Tom Beegin for Mersin USA. We believe that Judge Talwani below went right down the center of the bowling lane, if you will, following the principles of Markman and Phillips to articulate her claim construction. I want to address the issue of fastening and this idea that fastening is somehow supporting or strengthening. That came up at the oral argument. And I want to direct the court to page, let me make sure I got from my notes the right page. ...901 of the oral argument. And then it's also page... So if I could take a step back first. So the red brief or the yellow brief references pages, appendix 350 to 359 for the idea that that this fastening stem can have a strengthening component. And really, it's page appendix page 353 that the district court focused in on. And at page 353, the following was said.
So are you leaving page 901? Are you leaving pages 901? Are you done?
No, 901 talks about 353. So 353 says, regarding the aforementioned claims, Mellerugin did not disclose a fastening stem that extends from the mounting cuff of the first and second fuse end caps and into the second cavity that receives the conductor when the fastening stem is separate from the fuse body. Paragraph. It is considered within the level of someone of ordinary skill in the art at the time of the invention to have extended a nub or stem or some sort of extension to provide support for a connection or fastening between the components. So it doesn't say strengthening, it says for connection or fastening. And then going, you know, that issue was argued below, and Judge Talwani at page appendix 901 talked about it, and the court said, but you're not claiming that this language, the language of page 353, supports the argument that, I guess I'm lost. I see there is a reference to supporting or...
I'm sorry, you're reading from 901?
Yes.
What
at the top, lines 1 through
I see,
8.
I see, okay.
Or 1 through 7.
Yeah.
So
okay.
She says, I guess I'm not understanding. She says, it's this supporting is for a connection or fastening between components. So the court recognized that sort of fastening... you know, meant fastening. But I think I take Judge Stoll's point as well that the court's ultimately articulated claim construction was addressing only what the court said on page appendix 20.
Well, what do you make of that? I mean, I'm glad you turned to Judge Stoll's question because I think that's the important piece of this. And I guess I was interested in hearing your response. I mean, was it not your view that we were dealing with the distinction between unitary and multi-piece, and that was the deciding?
The distinction, I think, and this gets to the way at the disclosure within the specification. So this arose from the fact that the patent initially had three species. It had three species, and in the yellow brief, were criticized for associating the species with the companion figures. So if you look at the restriction requirement, the court or the patent office was clear, as is the case in, you know, restriction requirements, that the species and the figures are aligned. And the Little Fuse makes the point in the yellow brief that yes, we disclaimed the figure, but we didn't disclaim the species. And they say, well, the court, that, you know, the patent office used the shorthand for that. So I think Judge Talwani below recognized that it, you know, that the first and second species plainly did not have a fastening stem, and that the first and second species, when counsel below said were dedicated to the public, that counsel below was talking about the species being dedicated to the
You're
plant.
Talking about the figures. The figures that show embodiments 1 and 2, those were not claimed. But there might be, I suppose there could be something else that's a unitary, assuming for a moment it's a unitary construction as in figures 1, or I think it's figures 2, or maybe it's 1A and 1B, but that there's some sort of additional piece of metal or whatever the material is that is in the, I guess that someone could point to and say, this element could be, it's a little thicker here, so it could be, we're going to argue that it's a fastening stem. Is that, we're doing our best here because we've got a situation where the examiner at the end, well, in allowing the claim,
right.
said, claim 1 is generic. And it includes more than just the third embodiment. It now includes something that derives from the first and second embodiments, right?
Our position below was that the examiner never made an affirmative finding that it was generic. The examiner rejoined it without explanation. And so we can point to the MPEP. And so the question is, was that a mistake, and what's the impact of that? You know, what's the impact of rejoining?
Some sense. What the examiner did. If it was crazy, it's just inexplicable and inconsistent with the laws of physics, then sure, it's a mistake. But doesn't it make some sense to say that what happened here is, arguably, as the examiner may have viewed it, is that it started with 3 species and limited it to 1, and then when he came back, he said, okay, we'll go with species 3, for purposes of the fastening stem, and will add the requirement of a fastening stem to species 1 and 2, and thereby they become legitimate dependent claims of species 3. Species 3 becomes claim 1, species 2 and 1 became claims 8 and 9. Why isn't that a reasonable way for the examiner to have proceeded in withdrawing the restriction requirement?
I think that that stands in conflict with the specification.
Conflict with the specification? Admittedly, the drawings, for example, do not show a fastening stem in the first and second species, but they also don't exclude that possibility, right?
I think that we're just left in the dark with that. So if we go back to first principles of notice, that people like Merson need to be on notice of what's in the patent document, what this document is or shows.
Why don't the claims give us that notice? Because if you read the claims, you have claim 1 says, okay, it's got to be a fastening stem. And claims 8 and 9 say it's got to have what claim 1 said, because they're dependent claims, and it's also can be unitary, either stamped or machined. Why isn't that all the notice you need for purposes of establishing that a unitary device with a fastening stem is covered?
I think that my answer to that is I don't know how to unpack that. I don't know how to imagine what I don't know how to imagine within the four corners of the patent specification and the totality of the file history what a machined fastening stem. And you brought...
What if there was a single-piece device that had, the first two components? I think it's a mounting something in a terminal, mm-hmm. okay? And then there was something that went on top of those to fasten them. Could that be a fastening stem? I realize it might not meet other elements of the claim because it doesn't insert. But,
possibly.
I mean, there could be something. But the question is, in other words, you might still have an argument, even if we try to make this examiner's determination in the prosecution history make sense. You might still have an argument because you still have a fastening stem. It's not a fastening.
Hypothetically,
stem. But I mean, and then also I have another question, which is you said something before that I'm not sure I agree with, so I just want to ask you about it. You said we're in the dark as to what the examiner was thinking. I'm not sure that's true because the examiner said, rightly or wrongly, claims 1 through 7 and 10 through 18 are allowable. Claims 8, 9, 19, and 20, previously withdrawn, require all the limitations of the aforementioned allowable claims. So that's, Isn't that is the very test and what the examiner was saying. The examiner was saying that those claims require these elements, rightly or wrongly. You know what the examiner is saying. The examiner is saying that it's generic.
Our problem with the generic argument, and I'd like to point to Appendix 760 through Appendix 763 of the whole exchange at oral argument at the first Markman. Opposing counsel, in describing the restriction requirement in the initial sense, said so, and this is beginning at line 21 at Appendix 760. So in the initial prosecution, Littlefuse had proposed three different species that were recognized by the examiner. The first was 2A, 2B, which was a single-piece construction, and the fine part is hard to read, but this was a machined end cap. And then going on to 761, I read that on 760 to show that opposing counsel below associated the species with the figures. So when there was this statement ultimately on page 763 that the 3A and 3B were dedicated to the public. Opposing counsel, I understood opposing counsel to mean because of the association with the species, with the figures, both at oral argument below, and how the examiner had associated the species with the figures, that they were dedicating species 1 and 2 to the public. In the brief, they point out that the examiner withdrew the claims. While that's correct, but they identified which claims were to be prosecuted, which was, dependent claims 7 and 8 were associated with the third species, and that made its way in. So I think that...
Yeah, just because there's a restriction requirement doesn't mean anything's dedicated to the public, right? It means that somebody can file a later patent application, a continuation, or...
Oh, sure. That certainly could have been
done.
Where
are you getting the dedication of the public from? I'm sorry.
Opposing counsel.
That's Ms. Minister's statement.
Yeah.
Okay.
What does 3A and 3B? Do they have fastening stems? They don't. Okay. And Ms. Minister voluntarily said, and so those are dedicated to the public.
I'm sorry.
Line
760, 761.
Page 8, Appendix 763, lines 19 through 24.
Right, but that's not necessarily saying those are dedicated to the public, whether or not they have a fastening stem, right? It's just without a fastening stem, they'd be dedicated. Isn't that effectively what she's saying?
Well, I interpreted what she was saying is that species 1 and species 2 were dedicated.
Fastening stem or no fastening stem?
Well, we go back to the restriction requirement itself, and the restriction requirement tells us that the restriction requirement, this is at Appendix 173, species 1, which is figures 2A, those are machined fused end caps. Species 2, stamped fused end cap, and species 3, an assembled fused end cap comprising a fastening.
Doesn't that maybe go a little bit too far given what their proposed claim construction was and their lawsuit to think that they actually gave up a machined end cap that has a fastening stem?
Again, I don't know what that would look like, and they certainly, they could have not stipulated.
Is that a factual question, what that would look like?
I think that is a factual question, and they stipulated that our structure didn't meet the construction set forth by Judge Sol on page, or Judge, I'm sorry, Judge Talwani on page Appendix 20, which was simply a stem that extends from the mounting cuff and into the second cavity of the terminal that receives the conductor and attaches the mounting cuff to the terminal. I mean, it's a fairly straightforward claim construction in light of the intrinsic record, and then they stipulated that they couldn't, that fact question, they stipulated it in our favor.
But attaches there is used in the sense of two pieces, two separate components being attached, right?
Well, as my friend argued in his opening argument, that could have been a Markman of a Markman, and they could have argued that later if they chose, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Well, you were there. I mean, I guess going back, and this goes back to the point that Judge Stoll was making with your friend. Was it your understanding that there was any ambiguity, or was it your understanding that the court's claim construction decided the issue of whether unitary is covered or not?
I think the court was focused on a nub.
Can you answer that possibly yes or no, and I'll let you explain
court,
it?
I think the court did think it was two pieces because you had a nub going into a cavity, and that's why the court, for the second claim construction hearing, wanted to know what a cavity was and what it meant to have a stem or a nub going into a cavity. What did that mean? And so, not on appeal here, but in the record, is that my friend stipulated that a cavity was an open space. They didn't contest the court's construction of, you know, into, going into, extending into, that sort of ordinary meaning. So I think it all, you know, flows. But
well, there was a dispute about that as to whether it included against.
They said
it does. They said it does, and you said no.
Correct.
Okay.
So I see my time is up. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. You used all your rebuttal, but we'll restore 2 minutes if you need it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points following up on counsel's argument. With regard to the district court's understanding of the construction as being limited to a multi-piece construction, further down, I had cited to appendix page 23, further down when the district court analyzed the prosecution history in the reconsideration, the court stated that it had considered the prosecution history, including Little Fuse's argument that when the examiner rejoined the claims, including claims 8 and 9, the examiner was expressing his understanding that claims 1 and 10 covered both unitary and multi-piece embodiments. However, the court found this argument unpersuasive. So it's clear that when the court made its Markman ruling, it was aware of the fact that claims 8 and 9 were reciting unitary embodiments.
Where were you just reading from? I didn't catch the page. A23?
23, yes, yeah, which was from
that's
the...
That's fine, thanks.
Yeah. And so the court understood full well that claims 8 and 9 were inconsistent with the court's construction of claim 1. The court rejected the argument that that was a rationale for claim 1 being broader. And the court essentially, on reconsideration, when the issue was brought up that that would mean that claims 8 and 9 would be invalid for not limiting claim 1, the court said, while the court's construction may impact the validity of dependent claims, their validity was not directly before the court, therefore clarification is not warranted and reconsideration was denied. So the court's ruling in the court's own statements limit the claim to multi-piece construction. That was an error. That is contrary to the claim language, not dictated or mandated by the specification, and contrary to the prosecution history.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank both sides, and the case is submitted.